Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, a podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously, possibly with the caveat that this podcast is a little bit more serious than most, I would imagine.
Yes, we have a market value of seriousness. We are exactly at our market value of seriousness.
We're not exceeding any market value, and the deal of seriousness we have made is perfectly within the laws as they stand. This is about Saracens, about the salary cap. It's the first podcast we've been able to do with it with... that's wrong to say with all the information out in the open, because it isn't, which is one of the limitations of any conversation on this matter. But it is the first one with Phil.
Hello, Phil.
Back from doing his Zach Galifianakis out of the hangover thing, carrying a baby round in a backpack round Thailand and, well, wherever else in Asia you were.
Where did you go?
Hello, Tim. Hello, JB.
Hello, mate. Where did you go?
We went to Thailand, couple of places in Thailand, Malaysia, couple of places in Malaysia, and Singapore.
How the other half live, eh?
Very cool.
And you don't even work for BT Sport. Amazing.
No BT Sport money.
No BT Sport money.
Unfortunately.
Bloody hell. Civilian money.
Sir Yallop on Twitter, at Rugby Podcast is where you can find us, said... I asked for questions and thoughts and stuff for this for the podcasts this coming week. He said, just please, Phil, never leave again.
That's nice.
It was remarkable. So I've been listening in intently and obviously messaging you guys from my remote locations. It was remarkable to hear some of JB's transformation towards Stephen Jones last week.
He is my father.
It was an interesting podcast to listen to last week. Some amazing revelations broken by JB and some interesting takes to listen to.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's... Did you think, Phil, at any point when you first listened, I think JB might have lost the plot a little bit here?
There was a couple of times. I did wonder on the Marrow 800K,
JB was kind enough not to actually mention a player's name, unlike Sky Sports, who claimed it was breaking news 3 days after JB brought up the story.
Well, I actually agree with Sky News. I think if you've got the information, break the news, and give the names too.
Yeah.
Because these are rule encroachments. They are law encroachments, according to salary cap rules, and that's something which we'll be discussing later.
Yes.
I thought it was a little bit... It's a little bit Rugby Union Writers Club to say, oh, hang on a minute, this is out of order, you don't report that. Because actually, maybe if these guys have been reporting and doing their jobs to start with, I didn't take an outside journalist, Laura Scott, hang on, I always get this wrong. It's Laura Scott, or is it, what's her name? What's her maiden name? Is she going by a maiden name now?
I'm not sure. Laura Scott, I think, is fine.
Who is Daily Mail and now BBC, who broke it originally.
I mean, it took an outside person with journalistic skills, not writing skills, journalistic skills, to actually sniff this out. So,
but fair play, JB, because there was a lot of raised eyebrows after the last podcast.
There was, mine included.
Yeah, mine included at the time. But at least I didn't say you're talking bollocks on the podcast. I said, you may be right.
Maybe
let's wait and see.
And there were some things where you were talking bollocks.
No, I don't think I was. I mean, I still don't think I was talking. I mean, my mind has changed again, but I think I was right to start with. It depends on how you look at it, through what prism you look at it.
Okay,
well, so... There were a few things that you said that were plain wrong.
Which... the property deals.
Property deals at commercial rates springs to mind, and also that Saracens had declared everything to the salary cap manager.
Let's not get into the weeds straight away. Where we're at is Saracens have been relegated via a deal ultimatum that has been rumoured, but we don't actually know what the compromise arrangement was there and what the alternative to relegation was, if there was one. We don't know.
Neil Golding suggested in his statement, or actually stated in his statement, so that's the new Saracens chairman, he said that there was the forensic audit on the table.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they chose against it. The words that he used were they didn't want the emotional and financial strain of an ongoing audit. That was his formal statement, which was interesting wording, I thought.
Fine. I mean, I don't blame him for not wanting a further audit, personally.
Turn yourself down a tiny bit, JB.
Sorry.
No, you don't have to be sorry. It's fine. It's fine. Just a tiny bit.
Yeah, I don't blame him for not wanting a further audit. I think we all know that they would have failed it based on, you know, doing the deals previously. What is the point? Take medicine.
I suspect, because when you look through the report and you look through the calculations of how they got to the ultimate fine, it talks about in each individual year, before these non-disclosed agreements, they had headroom.
Mm.
And I suspect, had they done that further audit, that headroom would have been at best reduced or totally eliminated, and there would have been a deficit, which would have actually meant that their penalty jumps from 5.4 million to, who knows? I suspect that was part of the reason, or certainly
100%.
The fear of that was part of the reason.
Yeah.
Did you find it odd that having... made a decision in November 2019 about the previous three or however many seasons, it was odd it 3 months later to be making a judgment on the current season? It just seems bizarre to me that having spent so long from March to November, having waited till after the World Cup to get all their ducks in a line, that there wasn't an assessment made of the current season, or at least that coming out as part of the report, like immediately in November. This is what's happening previously, and immediately we're going to deal with currently, because it just seemed like this current season one came out of the blue, and I think that's one of a number of things that's happened that has fed potential conspiracy theorists or any sort of feeling of Saracens being hard done by.
Yeah, I don't see where this comes into the Premiership rules. I mean, I don't know where these rules are written.
No, this bit in particular. So if you look back on the full report,
yeah,
it appears that everything's been done by the book when the information came out. On this bit, the relegation and how they're dealing with it partway through a season, so we don't actually know what Saracen's final bill will be at the end of this season, because this season has not finished.
No. So, allegedly, like they couldn't calculate all of their England credits. Or if they could, the effect of it smoothing came into play. So, let me just explain that. The England credits, do you know how they work?
So you get like a rebate on the salary effect.
If you're in the EPS squad.
Yeah, so
it's if you miss games, I think it's. So you're in the EPS squad and you're unavailable for Premiership games. So like this weekend, anyone in the 34-man squad was unavailable for a game, they will get the credits for this weekend.
So let me give you an example, right? I have Tim on my salary cap.
Mm-hmm.
Tim...
Fine choice.
Exactly. Very fine choice.
Multi-positions, can play front row, back row, 10.
Announcer.
Stadium announcer.
What can't he do? Right? And I decided to pay him, I'm just making these figures up, £350,000.
Yeah.
Now, he might then be entitled to £100,000 worth of England credits. And again, these are not accurate numbers, I'm just making them up.
If he were to play 10 games, for example, or be unavailable for 10 club games.
Which means that these credits then come into the salary cap, and then £100,000 of Tim's salary is effectively removed.
Yeah,
that's not technically exactly true, because you can the credits basically act as conduits to get the money from England into the player's pocket. Make sense? But it is done via the player's contract.
Yeah.
Now, if that player does not get picked for England, you've then got to find an extra £100,000.
Someone like Jack Singleton.
Someone like Jack Singleton.
For example.
George Cruz.
Exactly.
Well, for example, were he to have gone
Dave
to Japan,
Atwood,
like people
maybe.
Saying,
I mean, maybe you might need to send Dave Atwood to Toulon. Because
for a period of time.
For a period of time. So now I think, and I don't know this exactly, but Nigel Ray is talking about the effect of smoothing. So smoothing, presumably, and I don't know this for a fact, but presumably smoothing is... If I have Tim on a three-year contract and I've already started to get his England credits, rather than have them all in one go and then have to find the extra £100,000 for Tim in the next 2 years, I can have a smooth effect so I can manage my cap more efficiently. And that's what Nigel Ray referred to, which is that the effect of smoothing means they couldn't get all of their money immediately.
Now, Ed Griffiths, when he was on with Will Greenwood, spoke about, he gave an analogy, which I've messaged you guys about, but he gave an analogy of the salary cap. You only know what you've spent when you conclude the season. So
yes,
this year, at the end of June, they will know exactly what they've spent, because there's exactly as Jay's set out.
Yeah.
There's a smoothing of the England credits, there's injuries, there's loan deals and everything else. His analogy was, it's baking, like baking a cake. It doesn't matter where the cake is halfway through, it only matters where it is at the end.
No, that's not true. That's a bad analogy.
It's a bad analogy.
Yeah.
Because certainly you shouldn't be checking the cake partway through, because you'll alter the temperature of the oven. You trust the process.
Yeah. And you don't guess with the ingredients.
No.
And hope you get a cake at the end of it.
No. So the better analogy that I think works better is, so if you're running an 800 metre race, but not a normal race, you're running an Olympic qualifying race. Time to qualify is 1 minute 45.
Mm.
So if you're 10 seconds ahead of qualifying pace at 400 metres, or 10 seconds behind qualifying pace at 400 metres,
fast,
it doesn't matter, unless at 400 metres you are so far behind that you'd have to break the world record, the 100 metre world record, four times in a row to get it. And that, my assumption, and everything's assumptions because we've got no transparency, is that where Saracens, where they have deemed themselves and where the league have deemed themselves, is they are at the 400 metre mark and they would have to break four consecutive 100 metre world records to get under that one minute 45 mark.
Mm. Yeah, so I've got a conspiracy theory now about this season in particular.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, let's compartmentalise this, the decision about relegating them, and then we can... Yeah, yeah.
Well, I sort of think...
I know there is... But just to try and make it easier to follow. So,
yes.
Yeah, you've got a point on that.
Because this season is different to the others. We now have a lot of information on the past three seasons. On this season, there is no transparency.
There's no information.
Yeah. So in a way, there is some transparency, okay? Because we don't need to worry about the contracts and whatnot, because we can look back at the reports, even though the report was released after the relegation, but we can look at it and go, look, they had headroom, right? That's fine. So if those contracts just run into this year, they're still going to have headroom. So I was speaking to someone at Saracens, and when they first heard the news about how much they're over, they're like, well, is that it? I mean, we can get under that pretty quickly. Liam Williams moves on. There's a couple of retirements. We can solve this. And it turns out they couldn't, because they couldn't get rid of any of their players, which is another problem.
Yeah, without paying them like a redundancy fee.
Yeah.
So if Figolo, for example, has got 6 months left to run on his contract, that's going to give him 150K. He's not going to leave without that 150K.
No.
Or at least a significant portion of it.
So the other element of this is, I thought, well, why don't they just bloody rewrite the damn contracts? So all the contracts, as in the players' pay packets, are absolutely fine, right? If you just look at the money in, money out, absolutely fine. So why not say, look, you've got one more year left on your £150,000 contract, let's just do a 1 year now for £150,000. I thought, well, that would solve it. Of course it wouldn't, would it? Because that would mean that the averaging out of those figures would actually be over 2 years rather than, say, 3 years or 5 years or 4 years. So actually all you've done is...
What's the conspiracy element? The clubs were deliberately not signing players?
That's why. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, there's a lot of clubs that needed a lot of players, and there are a lot of players available at Saracens, and they weren't taken. And it'll be interesting to see now Saracens are relegated, where the clubs go, actually, yeah, we'll take those players. Because if they did, I think that's really, it's quite sly.
So from a timing perspective, what you're saying is Saracens had, before this relegation was decided, a period where they could have offloaded players.
Yep.
None of the clubs were playing ball with that. Now, I think that it makes sense for two reasons from the other clubs. One would be a very simple, a lot of clubs are paid up to the salary cap. Not all of them, but a lot of them have done their business for this season, 6 or 12 months ago. The other side is kind of it doesn't need to be collusion or a conspiracy theory. It's relatively simple game theory that if no one signs any of those Saracens players and almost forces them to go down, then every club in the league has a better chance of top four and winning the Premiership.
It's very Machiavellian.
It is. Now, I'm not saying there was any collusion to get to that, because I think most of the clubs are smart enough to get there anyway.
Yeah.
So it depends how you look at it from a conspiracy perspective.
You know, take, for instance, a club in Europe, right? And they're desperate for an extra player to make sure that they can qualify to that next European stage. Maybe they'll take that player tomorrow.
But then London Irish have a fly half short. Paddy Jackson's out long term, and they're battling relegation potentially, looking over their shoulder.
They might even say, in London Irish's case, well, let's get these chumps relegated, and we don't need to worry about our fly half situation.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a conspiracy theory. I think one thing that has fed the conspiracy theories is the governance of Premier Rugby, which I think is going to have to change.
Oh, I think they should just basically sack everyone and start again.
It definitely does need to change.
For anyone that isn't aware of how it works, and do correct me if I'm wrong, because I looked into this, the people that govern and decide, there are people in positions of CEO, chairman and things like that of Premier Rugby, and, you know, running the sales arm and the marketing arm and all the rest of it. But ultimately, the board are the chairman of the clubs.
Yes.
And the executive
of
the 13 clubs, and the executive committee are three of those chairmen. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's my understanding. I don't actually know who it is.
No,
at this point,
but they
in time.
Must vote within for which members of that. So you have an organisation making decisions about punitive decisions about a club made by the other clubs who have a vested interest in a punitive decision about a club.
I just think they should get...
Yeah.
That seems to me a bit bonkers.
They should have a league commissioner. Everything is given to this guy, a Roger Goodell-type fella, does basically everything, a league office, so on and so forth, and at the end of every year, they can have an owners' meeting, they can decide if they want rule changes, this, that and the other, and then they can go ahead with that.
I would be happy with that.
I'd be happy to be the commissioner.
I think you would do a grand job, JB.
I'd be a great commissioner.
JB 2020 has just suddenly got upgraded from RFU.
Like everything. I mean, you know, the communications, you know, the way that they managed the message, the way that they kind of made it worse. I mean, this could have been over, really, couldn't it, when they first got the points. But we've managed to drag it out and drag it out and drag it out.
It has been dragged out, and I think that's probably a good time to link into the actual full report, which has now been released. So this runs from 15-16 to 16-17 to 16-17, 17-18, 18-19. So to bookend, three seasons.
To bookend that first little segment, I hope, and I'm sure more information is going to be revealed, I hope there is the level of transparency about how and why and in what way the decision to relegate Saracens automatically. I hope there's some transparency over that, because we're just feeding off scraps and hearsay and reported reasons why. But you're right. So I'm really interested to hear your sort of summary, Phil, because I know you had a very long flight the other day. In fact, you had a flight a couple of hours after the report was leaked online.
I did. I was half hoping the report... So it was... a few hours after the official Premiership Rugby report. So I've only read the redacted report. I've not seen the unredacted one. But obviously everyone can fill in the blanks because of the leak.
Yeah.
I was kind of half hoping it did get leaked, or did get released. So I had something to read on a 13-hour flight, and half hoping it didn't, so I could just sleep for 13 hours, or as long as my 11-month-old baby would sleep. Fortunately or unfortunately, it got released. So I had the pleasure of reading the full 103 pages on that flight.
Yeah.
My take... So I think the problem we had before was there was so little information that was available. The Premiership Rugby initial statement pretty much only said minus 35 points and £5.4 million. There was no other salient information in it. Now, in the absence of that information, there's been a huge amount of speculation. Some had degrees of truth to it, but not the full amount of truth, and some was just totally wrong. There's also been a bit of a PR game played by Saracens at various different points in time. And that has meant there's been wrong assumptions. And I think there's probably three key bits of information that has been released in this report that certainly was not considered before. And those are, firstly, the It does refer to, it does state the 2015 investigation into a breach that that Premier Rugby brought against Saracens, and it was settled. It's kind of three lines in the whole report. It doesn't go into much detail at all. But what it does do, what Lord Dyson in his final summary says, that should have been and was a yellow card for Saracens. It should have been a clear warning that anything that's gone along in the past is not going to fly in the future. And Saracens should have tried to be whiter than white in the future. And that's where I have a problem, because the next point is the concealments. All of these breaches are due to concealments or non-disclosures.
Yeah.
23 counts of non-disclosure to the salary cap manager.
And one of the things that Saracens said, which I took them as for their word when they said it, is that they reported these companies as and when they occurred. Turns out they didn't.
They didn't, and they didn't report the image rights deal, and they didn't report the MNB payment to a player for events. So that is dodgy.
Yep.
At absolute best, you can say Saracens were stupid and naive, monumentally stupid and naive, given the previous position. At worst, and they don't go as far as this, and I wouldn't go as far as it, but at worst, you could say they were trying to deliberately circumnavigate the salary cap.
And you would think if they thought that it was done in good faith within the spirit and the regulations of the salary cap as it existed, then still declaring it to the salary cap manager as, hey, we're paying them this, but it's not to do with the salary cap, and here's why we think that's the case.
Yeah.
That's kind of, I think that's a built-in part of the process.
And in fact, they
even acknowledge that some of the things that Nigel Ray has done since 2015 were previously, or there were years where it was acceptable, and then in subsequent years, slight changes to the way they did it meant it wasn't acceptable.
Yeah. So the property deals is exactly that.
Deals,
Nigel Ray said they did. We don't have the details, but they said they did similar but not identical deals in the past. So he assumed that
which were looked at by a salary cap manager and okayed.
Yes.
Which is why I think that there is no binary truth here. There's cognitive dissonance. And I think my takeaway from the report is anyone who wanted to go into it going, Saracens are evil, conniving, can read whatever they want into that. People that want to say Saracens have done nothing wrong can read into that and actually both sides can make an argument.
Yes.
There is muddy truth.
It very much depends how you want to look at it. Okay, so I stand by my comments last week, which is, from a day-to-day point of view, under the law, I don't think they've done anything wrong. I mean, they really haven't.
Under the law, regulations.
Hold on a second, Phil. Hold on a second. Hold on a second, right? I really don't think that they have. I think, even though this report says these are not commercial transactions, I can see a good commercial reason why you would do it, particularly if you were Nigel Ray and you could get one third of several houses in West London and get a player paying the mortgage and maintaining them. I mean, you know, he's that wealthy, he needs somewhere to park some cash. You know, it's better than your bog standard investment. It's probably better than putting it into the bank. So
these deals, the way that they're structured, are not better for Nigel Ray than the standard investment.
I've actually spoken to someone with one of these deals, right? And now that individual does not live in their house, one third of their rent goes to Nigel Ray. You know, so that, you know, there are plenty of deals out there, plenty of these property deals, which are, from what I can see, perfectly fine.
Can I just chime in on that one very briefly to highlight another one of these muddy areas? And I'll take, just completely separate from what JB has just said, let me take the deal reported with Chris Ashton, for example.
Yeah.
Which was £270,000 for a 20 or 30%, I can't remember.
20%.
20% stake in a property, which, the way that's said by people, is quite often, he's given Ashton 270k. I believe I'm right. That sounds incredibly dodgy. And the whole thing might be a bit dodgy. I get that. But the salary cap manager valued the real terms benefit to Chris Ashton. And the bit that was added onto the salary cap was £8,000, because that is what Chris Ashton saved in interest. So you can easily say, he's just given him 270k. Even the salary cap manager said, you've just saved Chris Ashton £8,000 in interest. That's going in the column. However, I think when the calculations were done for this, what's the full breach? They've put the full amount in because the loan wasn't paid back within the same year.
Yeah. Well, correct.
Chris Ashton has subsequently paid that money back.
Yes.
So let me just let me just talk about that. That is exactly how it should be calculated. Exactly. It is the benefit that you receive from working with Nigel Ray, which is absolutely fine. Now, let me just go back to why I think about it differently now. You have to look at this not through the lenses like we were last week, or like I was last week, of just simply the law and what's commercial and what's not, but the law in regards to the salary cap.
The regulations.
Regulations, which is why Lord Dyson's findings, they are not the findings of a man working within the UK legal system. They're the findings of a man working within these regulations.
Correct.
So, for instance, that loan which is repaid by Chris Ashton.
So, and to be clear, Nigel Ray has got every penny of that £270,000 loan for that property. Yeah. He has got that back.
Plus interest.
Plus interest.
Yeah.
And Chris Ashton's saving, his benefit, was £8,000, and however much the property is accrued in value, which could have gone down.
Yeah. So my second point was, I don't think this is proportionate. But there again, maybe it shouldn't be proportionate. Maybe it should be punitive. So, you know, if that loan has come back in, well, maybe that loan has come back in its entirety, because what they're trying to say here is, don't do this. And in that case, I can kind of get on board with that.
And that is what they're doing. Yeah, you're exactly right. Lord Dyson has, based on what I've read, in my view, completely correctly adhered to the judgments, more importantly, the salary cap manager is completely correctly adhered to the regulations, because Lord Dyson was generally only determining whether the salary cap manager acted reasonably within the regulations.
Yeah. Mm.
Now, you're right, the Chris Ashton one is probably the one that would stick in the craw from a Saracens fan's perspective most, because the benefit to Chris Ashton was limited. It's very nice, but it's not a huge... He's not a millionaire because of that deal.
No, I mean, you could argue he had to move clubs. It wasn't an inducement to make him stay. It might have even been an inducement to make him go. Because he needed the signing on fee to pay off Nigel Ray.
The point being, when you look at the £1.3 million of house investments, actually, assuming that the Vunipola brothers pay the £450,000 back, as Ashton has paid the £270,000 back, etc., then the actual salary cap term benefit to players of that £1.3 million is £40,000.
Yes.
So it looks dodgy as hell, and I totally get it. And who knows what the deal will be struck in the future between the Vunipola brothers and Ray. None of my business. Mm. But assuming that it works the same as the Ashton one has, I can understand how it you could just say, why wasn't this just out in the open? Why didn't you just admit this? And then you don't get the full...
I think they would have got away with almost everything if they admitted it, if they just declared it.
Well, that's... I think there would certainly have been more lenience had they declared
100%.
It. But I do... There is a reason why the regulations are... they prohibit, basically, any... loans that go for more than one salary year, salary cap year.
Yeah,
that's the salary cap manager should not be speculating on the future position of whether a loan is paid back.
Yeah,
on what the appreciation on that house is going to be. Everything needs to be wrapped up neatly in that one year.
Yes,
and that is why these are punitive penalties.
Yeah.
But they're done for a reason.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
To go on to what's my final point, they're done for a reason, and Saracens they went in eyes wide open. They were fully signed up to all of these regulations. They'd already had the slap on the wrist.
Yep.
They've been reminded of these regulations. So why on earth are they playing buggers?
And this sounds daft. I actually don't think they thought they were breaking the rules. I mean, when they did it, because of course no one's actually tried doing this before, and when they had tried something similar in the past, actually it was signed off. Now, just looking at this, that would be my Saracen's point of view.
Yeah.
Think about it from the point of view, though, from another club owner. So look at someone who cares deeply about their players and their club, people like Simon Orange and Jed Mason. They must be looking at this thinking, okay, I can see why they might not think they've broken the rules, but why should I go around having to buy houses for players and go into commercial partnerships just because you know, Saracens are. And Saracens might have decided, I don't want to declare this because we think it's a competitive advantage. Undoubtedly, it is, actually.
It is.
But an illegal competitive advantage.
Yeah. And the point that Brendan Venter raised on his podcasts was that these are coming to play because Saracens have been too good at developing talent. Mm. And that's... I can kind of have some sympathy with that. But then... I mean, if you're a London Irish fan, for example, and your talent that you've developed is spread across the league, mostly in the southwest, in yep. Bath, but all the talent you've been unable to keep because you've been unable to afford them within the salary cap, you'd feel pretty aggrieved at a club circumnavigating.
Let's just say these deals are completely commercially viable. Like, you would do it with me, you'd do it with Tim. It doesn't really matter who the other party is. It's fine, okay. Even if that was the case, it's hard to find a counterparty. And if you do it when you're trying to renegotiate a deal, then that's really tricky too.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, I've got... You know, so, for instance, say if I decided to buy a property somewhere and I really wanted that property, even if it's just a normal commercial rate, so on and so forth, and that relied on me signing that new deal, even though I'm not getting any extra for it as such, I still really want that property. And I will sign that deal in order to get that property.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's that angle of it too, which actually is one of the Mario Itoje things, because his image rights were sold, I think, during his deal year.
The MNB deal, the lump sum of £95,000 for 3 years, that's actually probably the most dodgy of all. I know it's a smaller value than another thing, but that £95,000...
There's no explaining that, is there?
There is no explaining it. So it's £95,000...
Well, there's a way of explaining it.
That was paid as a one lump sum, but... allegedly spread across 3 years, but you wouldn't know because there's no contract in place. And
it's a lot of money for no contract.
There's no evidence of him. Saracens seemingly couldn't find any evidence of him attending any event.
I think some has popped up photograph here and there. Yeah,
it probably has done, but they didn't. They didn't demonstrate.
Didn't demonstrate it. Yeah,
so that just looks serious.
Until this whole thing, I think my general thought is like bubbles down to a principal level. So. The gut feeling that I can't get away from, and I imagine other club owners in competition with them would have, is there's probably, you would imagine, a relationship between these deals and a renegotiation of a new contract to stay at the club. It seems fanciful to suggest that there was no relationship whatsoever between the player's future at the club and a deal being done.
Yes, I'm there.
I mean, there is an element as well, because I'm willing to say it was just because they were trying to redo deals. I know...
I don't know this. Yeah. It's just. I'm just saying it's a gut feeling and an opinion.
If you make your players financially stable, that is one less reason for them to leave your club. So if you're helping your players and you're looking at what they bring in and what they pay out, and then you make sure that your star players are... invested wisely and they're doing good things with their money rather than buying G-Wagons or whatnot, then...
G63 AMG.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. You really do not want to be doing that, right? That player will probably stay with you for slightly less money. And I think we saw that slightly less money, the fact that with all their stars, Saracens still had headroom. So I think you can look after your players and make sure they get into good spending habits and good planning without necessarily helping them buy houses.
And I get that, and that is the most charitable way of interpreting what's happened. And if that is the case, and with the context of having got a yellow card, you would think if it was... This is all above board.
Yep.
I am looking after my players because I genuinely care. And everyone that talks about Nigel Ray, I've never met the guy, everyone says that he genuinely cared.
Yeah, I believe that.
Yeah, I believe 100%. That. Then you would think... that making sure everyone knew I'm doing this and it's fine and this isn't affecting the salary by bringing it up with the salary cap manager. Again, it at very best, it is stupid and naive for a very, very, very experienced and talented businessman. It just seems bonkers.
It's almost unbelievably stupid and naive for someone who is so...
But I sort of wondered, like, is it sort of like trying to make your Labrador not chase a ball? You know, the reason that he is so wealthy... is because he's just got this ingrained instinct to go out and do a deal. Regardless of what that deal is. Maybe it's the deal which is attractive to him rather than the actual monetary reward. And I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. But I suspect that he still quite enjoys chasing that deal.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And do you know what's really worrying to me about this? And this is an RPA issue, I think. I think the RPA should be getting involved here. Where does this end? Because there are other deals that we know about. We know about, for instance, Wolfpack Lager, or how he helps out with other businesses, which have never been mentioned in the report, but are perfectly good things to be doing. Yep. Now, I hope that those things aren't affected in the future, because that's exactly how you can support your players. Again, think of it from the other side. If I just own a club, do I really want to be getting into business with all these different players just so I can compete with Saracens? Probably not.
Yeah.
But it's definitely a good thing for me to be doing.
I think there is still something that can be done there, because the issue here has been these loans that go outside the or one of the issues is the loans outside the salary cap period. Nigel Ray can still give his business experience and business advice without loaning the money. You can go through a bank or go through another business party.
But what happens if Nigel Ray introduces his players to his really wealthy friend to do the same thing?
Well, I was about to say that, you know, there was a story that also came up this week about the use of parking players on loan at other clubs to take them out of the sphere of your salary cap in a kind of deliberate and egregious manner.
I saw that, and it felt like a sensationalist headline to try and make something look worse than it is.
I don't know, because Mike Williams is sat on the bench up at Leeds Carnegie with no intention of coming on until the 79th minute. No intention whatsoever. And if you talk to people, I don't know, do you know anyone in coaching in the Championship?
Not anymore, really.
Well, if you talk to those sort of people, they will tell you, there is pressure on Championship clubs to take certain players and then loan them back in exchange for other players because, they need cap room and Championship clubs need players. But I kind of think, let's just deal with one thing at a time.
Yeah, no, but I meant that there's that story. There's been stories in the past and jokes made about, so-and-so's got the most expensive secretary. So-and-so's wife is the most expensive secretary at the club. Oh, so-and-so happens to have a corporate shindig where they're getting a huge amount of money to turn up and have a photo taken and a cup of tea with the boss or whatever. And all of those things, and, people will talk about the amateur days as in, it was amateur days, but there were deals being done and there were either brown envelopes happening or there was jobs in the city being given.
Ah, now that's an interesting one too.
So my point being, exactly what we talked about, there's an element where things like this have always happened, and there's an element about this where when one thing is shut, other loopholes will found.
Allow me to ruminate for 1 second here. But one of the things I think is, everyone talks about rugby being sustainable. It doesn't need to be sustainable. That's an absolute nonsense. And I always refer back to Phil using the example from Soconomics, which is rugby clubs are not there to make money per se. They are there to grease the wheels of companies owned by their owners.
Much like your Wasps visit.
Yes, quite.
You came out with a much better perception of Wasps after that, if you were a
business. Yeah, that's a really good point.
If I want to try and do business with someone or maybe with people that I've tried to be hired by in the past, I've gone, tell you what, I'm in town next Wednesday. Can I take you out for lunch?
Yes, exactly.
And that's an investment. It's cost me.
Yeah.
But I've reaped that. It's paid itself back and more in the future.
Yes, exactly.
So owning a rugby club is the ultimate expression of this, which is, hey, I'd like to do some business with you, Tim Cocker, PLC. Why don't you
come to my rugby club?
Come meet my players.
Have dinner.
So,
Voarders.
Right. So, these clubs might be losing money, but compared to the wealth of the owners, and they call them sugar daddies. No. You've got the wrong end of the stick. These are business tools for businessmen to develop further businesses outside the game. And by the way, maybe Nigel Ray is losing money on Saracens, but making an awful lot of money doing other things because he owns Saracens, for instance. Okay.
Yes.
So I think it's sustainable in that manner. But it is a little bit hypocritical to say, this networking tool which you have, you'll then deprive your players of the exact same networking opportunity that club affords you. And I think we need to be careful to make sure that players can benefit from their status, the fact that they can walk into a room at, say, the sales shop's corporate, and everyone wants to do business with them, everyone wants to help them. We've got to be just a little bit careful with not throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Because, exactly as you say, for example, if someone that Nigel Ray knows very well, a close business associate of many years, and another wealthy individual gets introduced by Nigel Ray to someone who then invests in a business of theirs, there's going to now be a lot of people going, that's salary cap contravention and that's dodgy. And actually, what it might be, exactly as you say, is in good faith trying to harness the networking power of rugby to try and mean that these players have a life after rugby.
Yeah, and I do think that this, as long as it's done in the right way and communicated in the right way and it's in the right parameters, the salary cap regulations don't necessarily prevent that.
No.
These specific scenarios were not that charitable definition, unfortunately.
No, they weren't.
Yeah.
And one final thing, like from my perception of from reading the report, was just so Saracens threw every argument
they possibly
could at this. I mean, they really did. They went for everything from their starting position of that the premise of the salary cap is anti-competition in line with UK and EU laws is an astonishing position.
It's
to take.
It's astonishingly stupid position
when you were an initial founding member, you've signed off the salary cap for 20 years. It was, and that section of the report was particularly heavy reading, but the payoff at the end of the anti-competition object decision, where Lord Dyson addresses each of the 4 points that Saracens made, arguing on that, and dismisses each one in turn, and then says, and your own CEO and chairman have said how much they benefit, how much they recognise that the salary cap is an important tool for the league and a benefit to the league.
Yes, completely agree.
That was a story.
Do you know what it strikes me as, right? It strikes me as they've got a law firm involved. Two things have happened. One, they didn't think it was going to be that serious, and then last minute they go, bloody hell, this is serious. Through every argument that you've got.
Yeah.
And secondly, it's like the law firm's misunderstood the task. The task is not to defend Saracens in the eyes of European law. It's to defend Saracens within the remits of the salary cap. And I think that's a little bit of a curveball for a litigator, because they are thinking in very, very clear terms about the things which you're an expert at. You're taking them out of that. You may as well be telling them to defend you against French law, because you need an expert in the rules of the salary cap, not the rules, you know, not the laws of the land, so to speak.
Which the salary cap manager clearly is.
Yeah.
Because the salary cap manager and Premier Rugby, as I've read it, they won pretty much every single point in the 100-page
report.
There is
not a single place where the Saracen solicitors win a single point.
It's remarkable. Which, considering how much shit they threw against the wall, hoping for some of it to stick. I mean, some of their arguments. So the anti-competition argument, the salary cap's not operated correctly. The salary cap has prevented them from being competitive in Europe was a particularly interesting one that I enjoyed Lord Dyson's response to that. The salary cap manager has acted in ways outside his remit. The salary cap manager has not acted reasonably. Mark McCaffrey's evidence was not credible. Like all these, I know.
Hang on, Mark McCaffrey, the old chairman of...
yeah.
Good God.
Or they, Saracens, there's lots more besides, but they threw all this shit at the wall and none of it stuck. Like, not a single bit of it stuck. Mm. And that, I've always quite liked Saracens. I'm as an England fan, I've loved what they've done for England, because the amount of talent that they have developed and brought through, both through their academy and brought in and then developed, is brilliant. But I lost quite a bit of respect and faith for Nigel Ray and the way that they operate. I still think Nigel Ray is a very good bloke, but the report does not read well for Saracens.
Yeah, I tend to disagree with you there. I tend to think they sail close to the wind. I know exactly what they were trying to do. They were trying to make their players as comfortable as possible without increasing the salary cap whilst maintaining a competitive advantage. And when you look at the salary cap rules and you know, get a world-class judge to go through them and operate in that environment and come to some conclusions, they just failed. They just failed. And they're going to have to take their medicine now. And by all accounts, they are taking it pretty well.
They are taking their medicine now. They've accepted relegation. There's no talk of them contesting or appealing
I think I do still think, though, even though there are breaches, it's a very, very small part of the Saracens' success. I think they could have made these players financially sustainable in other ways and declared it, and they'd still be just as successful as they are now. I don't buy any of the arguments that they cheated their way to the top, even though they broke the rules. And I really hate some of the reports. I mean, I heard one guy describing it as gammon thinking or something. You know, if you're still defending Saracens.
Saying it was Brexity in its gammonness. Just
wow.
Stunning and brave. That was pathetic.
Are playing up to a particular audience with that kind of statement. Yeah.
So it feels like, in terms of looking back, I think I'm disappointed again that it's sort of one step forward and you come straight back to square one in the sense that all the information came out, but not in the way that it should have come out. And then for the current decision that's been made hastily, there's no information whatsoever.
Yes. Yeah.
Officially. So
other than they are relegated and they've accepted
And they've accepted it. But am I suggesting that we're not satisfied with the process that happened, but we're all kind of in agreement that it's the 35-point penalty and the fine was the right outcome
in line with the regulations?
Yeah, no, I know the report, and I've had time to talk it over with professional litigators. I'll just say a big thank you to Nick West, who put a really good tweet, and by the way, is a litigator for hire. Nick West, find him on Twitter. He put a really good series of tweets as to why he felt the decision was reached the way it was. I sort of think it's fair now.
The process that was followed was correct. I think we now have transparency, which everyone has been craving since November and before. So I'm happy with all of that. Premier Rugby have, since this, so before the report came out, they've announced that there is going to be a further investigation and review of the salary cap regulations. And I do wonder how many changes we will see that would potentially change the magnitude of the penalty were the same things to happen in future.
Now, if we were doing a normal podcast, right, we'd break up all this with jovial games, would we not?
Yeah.
So, we would. Can we finish this off with a jovial game?
Yes, please. Yeah.
All right.
We haven't actually... Just one little thing we didn't touch on. Is there anything to say that hasn't been said on the image rights thing?
Thank you. That's where I'm coming to. That's exactly
okay. All right.
So, the Itoje image rights thing.
Yeah.
Very, very briefly... we'll just go into the facts of this. Itoje's image rights were £800,000 overvalued.
The Saracens overspend for last season, which £800,000 is a chunk of, was around about £900,000. So the vast majority of last season's breach was this image rights thing,
which
Premier Rugby / the salary cap manager valued an overpayment of £800,000.
Yeah, so that was that. Now, interestingly... apparently they got it valued by PwC, who also ordered the cap. But then during the investigation, PwC were never called upon to give evidence, and you know the new valuation was never contested. So, you know, I have no idea. The only thing I can think of for that is PwC were conflicted because they ordered the cap, and also they're going to have to value Mario's image rights, which leads you to the question: Why didn't they tell Nigel Ray they were conflicted beforehand?
Well, I don't think it's that, because Nigel Ray said he didn't use PwC's advice in making that payment.
Brilliant.
He paid a Big Four, world-renowned accountancy firm, to come up with a valuation, and then didn't use it and came to his own valuation, which happened to be the same as the PwC. So that
what? He got it valued. He didn't want to pay for the advice. He didn't want to make it official. He didn't want to pay for the advice. I came to his own value, which
happened
to be
the same. Well, that's one argument.
Pay the advice.
It does look a bit dodgy.
Because if that was the case, I'm guessing PwC would have a major bill on their doorstep right now.
Well, given that individual discrepancy led to nearly £2 million of the fine for Saracens, there could be a very clear professional negligence case, particularly when you've had another... professional services company value it at half.
Yes.
Yeah. So here's one. So Nigel Ray and other directors valued by whatever means they came to it, valued Maro Itoje's image rights, a 30% stake in Maro Itoje's image rights, as £1.6 million, meaning they valued his image rights at £4.8 million.
Yes.
Now, when we talked about this last week, when you brought it up before Sky News, before The Times, before anybody,
mm-hmm. yeah.
you were literally the person that broke this.
Yes, I was, go on.
Literally. Yes, you were.
I'll take it.
Fair play.
I did think you were a bit crackers, and I was worried when you were like, Tim, you're not going to like this.
Oh, no.
Anyway.
Fair play.
So they valued it at £4.8 million. I thought that was over a period of a contract for a few years, let's say. That is, can I just be clear, so people, if you don't know, that is a valuation of Mario Itoji's image rights, as in his endorsements from Adidas, Vitality, Vita Coco Water, etc. That is £4.8 million for his entire life.
Yeah.
Now,
it's a lot of cash.
It's a lot of cash. However, I would be willing to say that could be looked back on 10, even 20 years from now as a steal.
Yeah, exactly.
That could be very good deal.
By the way, Mario Itoji just won the World Cup. It was a steal. It was a steal. So I could also make the...
It looks dodgy as hell. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I'm not disputing that.
So if Mario Itoji has his image rights, and then he sells his image rights to... Me and Phil discussed this. I don't know if Saatchi and Saatchi offer this deal, but maybe Saatchi and Saatchi say, yeah, we'll definitely have him. Fine, done. I think he would sell those to Saatchi and Saatchi for less money than he'd sell them to Nigel Ray, because Nigel Ray is a very successful businessman, but Saatchi and Saatchi are the experts at getting your face on buses and whatnot. So I can see why Nigel Ray would have to pay over the odds to get these image rights. But yeah. I would pay over the odds to get these image rights, 100%.
It's like a stock investment in a way. You're actually betting on his value continuing to rise, or the scale of investment from corporations into rugby increasing. And so it looks dodgy as hell. I'm not saying it wasn't ethically questionable. I'm not saying that Saracens didn't deserve a fine as a result of it, because it was not disclosed. The right channels were not gone down. But anyone that says this is a sneaky way to put £800,000 in Mario Itoji's pocket, I think, or in a briefcase, I think that's wider the mark, because
I think it's a sneaky way to get one third of Mario Itoji's image rights.
It is that every single bit of an endorsement that you see Mario Itoji do for his life, 30% of that money will be going to Nigel Ray and those other directors who invested.
For nothing.
So I think my side on that is it could end up to two things. I'll say it could end up to be a very, very good deal. Mario could have a horrific knee injury in a month's time, never play again, and it'd be a terrible deal. The other side of it is the report does suggest that he was undervalued,
which brings
for
me to
his
my...
for his payment, and it was at a point,
for his salary.
For his salary,
yeah.
One report, I think it was in The Guardian, said that there are 10 better paid locks based on his regular salary in the Premiership.
Brilliant.
Which, I mean,
well, there was also the £95,000 in marketing money that was also not disclosed.
So there is also that as well.
Here comes my fun game then.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Let's value Mario Itoji. Who would like to try and value Mario Itoji?
Are we valuing his image rights or his
what
salary?
To Saracens.
So his
because
salary.
That's the only thing we can pay him for.
Well, locks are the highest paid players in the Premiership.
According to Sportif. Which I
don't believe him.
It doesn't sit right with me, that.
No.
Especially not if Mario is the 10th.
If Mario's 10th,
what are
they paying the rest of them?
So you think, so to Saracen, so he's going to miss a chunk of every season because of England.
Yep.
They will recoup some of that money.
Yep.
But nevertheless, that actually knocks him down from being someone I would invest the highest amount of money in.
So just let's start with the figure. Let's go
300k.
300k.
Let's start with a process first.
Yeah.
Are we? Because if I was valuing the construction of a building, so a chartered surveyor by trade, and we've got relatively little time and information, we're doing cost planning, which would be looking at. So we've built a school over here before. It cost £2,500 per metre squared. What's this school like compared to the previous one? What are the abnormals? So you'd pick a comparable item and then look at differences, abnormals. Some of which might be inflation, some of which might be construction methodology, some of which might be location facts and all the rest of it.
So who is our comparable player to Mario Itoje?
British and Irish Lion. It's got to be.
Yep.
A world star lock.
Alan Wynn?
Alan Wynn would be a good one.
He's slightly older, though, so James Ryan, perhaps, who's a younger
James,
age.
James Ryan's a good one. Or Henderson, someone like that.
Henderson.
Johnny Gray? Not so much.
So less so. James Ryan's a good one.
Because he was his lock partner for the Lions.
So you got
it was Alan Wynn, wasn't it?
So you got captaincy experience. You got the British and Irish Lions stuff.
Yeah.
But you can only value him on what he's worth to you. So do you make him one of the highest paid players in the squad?
Depends where the locks sit, because for me, locks are significantly less valuable than, say, 8, 9, 10, 15.
Tighter prop.
He can play
and
six.
Tighter prop.
He can play six, and he does have a disproportionate impact on games compared to any other lock in the world, pretty much.
I would agree. So he can do things that no other lock can do. Mm-hmm. And I include World Cup winning locks like Ritalik, like Etzebeth.
You'd argue though that Etzebeth can do things that he can't do.
Because of the sheer size, the mass
of
the man.
Big?
Are you joking? My God,
he's that big, you know.
Maro Itoje.
I think he looks great.
But he's not an Etzebeth. He's not 130 kg.
He's a pretty imposing.
He's a pretty imposing man.
He might be the smallest lock in the front squad.
I don't know.
What's his size?
Let's get up his official. Let's see if I can get his Saracens.
If it were caveman times, he would be running a massive tribe.
Well, he'd be running all of St. Albans.
Yeah, well.
St. Albans would be
king.
It already is his.
He'd be king.
He'd just be more his.
I've got him here as 6'5 and 115 kg.
Yeah, that's not massive.
Yeah, but
so that's not huge.
No.
I've stood next to him quite a few times.
He's a big boy. He's not as big as some. He's not a tight headlock, for example.
He's not a tight headlock, no. The famous yet rare tight headlock.
There'll be a premium on tight headlocks these days. So Etzebeth is 3 inches taller and a bit over a stone heavier.
Jeez, yeah. I mean,
there are benefits to both. You'd want both in your team.
Yes.
But they
and
can
we
both.
Today, watching Saracens, watching their massive prop go into contact, who is enormous, size doesn't really help. Explosive power. He is explosive, as you like. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we've got the 300,000. Now, here's a...
Let's just assume, if Alan wins on 300K, let's assume that's a starting point, and then we're going to judge the abnormals.
Yes.
Because there are abnormals. Playing six is one of them. Alan Wynn can't play six.
Yeah. No, he can't.
Certainly not not internationally.
He could play for Talk H. But he
yes.
He probably couldn't play for... I mean, he could play for Ospreys, actually. But not international.
Not international, and not... He's not going to be playing it in a Heineken Cup final.
No.
Maro can.
400,
we're saying.
But then, there are things... So Maro can do things that Alan Wynn can't do.
Okay.
He's not quite got the leadership, but he's not far off. Uh-huh. And he will... If you sign him on a 5-year deal, I would... Bank in three for three of those 5 years, he would have the same leadership.
Again, I'm going to touch wood as I say this, as an Englishman going into the Six Nations.
Yes,
very rarely gets injured. Very robust.
Yes,
ooh, that's
yeah,
a good one.
That is good.
That's
value.
A really good one. Yeah, so I think I'm not going to go any higher than 375. That's me, because if I went any higher than 375, I'm then going to start encroaching on other positions. So, do you know when someone breaks the record? People talk about Mario as the next £1 million lock. But if we spent £1 million on Mario, it means that our competitor would have, the best part of 700,000 to go away and buy Finn Russell and Johnny Sexton and then go and win him and then go and win the
because
European
he's
Cup.
An academy player. They can park him as a marquee if they want, can't they?
They can. So you've got to be at the club for, it's either 2 or 3 years yeah. before. So he can definitely be a marquee. So they can pay him anything they want, but Owen Farrell falls into that category. Yeah. Billy Vunipola falls into that category.
Mako,
yeah. All of those boys do. Vincent Koch does because he came from a different league.
So the second question then
Liam
is,
Williams does because he came from a different league.
How much of your salary cap do you allow to be eaten up by the fact he is the most marketable player on the planet?
If you own 30% of it, quite a lot.
Like, do you say, look, we're going to go with 50k less of players because Mario is so valuable? Do you say it's 100k? Do you say it's 200k?
And this is where you need that more information. You need to know what these deals... So, like, on the events deal, the MNB deal, it says in the report that it was not considered... The salary cap manager did not consider it to be a market rate for a player of his stature for appearances.
All right, so...
But I don't know what a market rate is.
You,
I don't know,
well,
if
this is what we're trying to,
I don't know if it's 1 grand or 20 grand.
Okay, so let's look through the other side of the telescope and say, I'm Saracens, and I'm going to say, all right, so you've given me all these reasons to pay you 400k. That's, you know, maybe you're asking for 500k. But I'm going to say this. The reason that you're so successful is because of the environment here.
Yeah.
Because we manage you well, which allows you not to be injured because of our top-class medical facilities.
Because our academy's so good, we've got Joel Kopoku, Nick Ezekwe. If you need a week off, we've got great people to come and bring in.
Yeah. We've got Cruz and Skelton.
Just in case.
And who you can still learn from, because they are
world-class lots. Maro, do you think you'd be as good if you played for Worcester? Do you think you could step into a Worcester shirt tomorrow? And not only that, look, I own 30% of your image rights now. This is working for us, because being here means you play for England. Playing for England means you play for the Lions. You know, what you're earning here is going to be inconsequential compared to your England money, your Lions money, and also all of your marketing money. So when you start looking at it like that, you think, maybe he's not a £400,000 lock. Maybe he is a £300,000 lock because of all the things that we give him in order to make him that extra cash.
Because he's in the Saracens environment.
Yeah. And I think would he be the best lock in France?
Probably.
I mean, he'd be good, but he wouldn't be that valuable in France, would he?
Well, and it is a different environment. So obviously he's not in the Saracens team. But the locks and the packs tend to be bigger and heavier.
Yeah.
And you get put through the grinder week in, week out.
The things you've just said may well be exactly what Maro Itoje would say to his parents, to his brother or whatever, or his very closest confidants. And that exactly what he said. He might go, I like being Saracens. I'm happy to take a little bit less because of all the things you just spelled out. It's never going to not be potentially viewed as some sort of conspiratorial thing by other people, and we can only ever speculate and we'll never know the truth.
No, we'll never know the truth, but I just suspect that Saracens get players cheaper regardless of houses, because you know, look, you can get 50k extra at Worcester. I'm sure you could get 200k extra at Worcester. He wouldn't win a thing.
And I loved listening to you guys with Ed Slater a few weeks ago,
and when
you put that question to him and he was candidly honest, and he said, would I take a pay cut if you could guarantee me winning things? Yes, I would.
We started at 25%, so our valuation of Maro at 400, we're back down to 300.
And yeah, and being at Saracens for the past few years has been tantamount to guaranteeing winning things.
Yeah.
Because they have won things pretty much every year.
And do you know what? The salary cap story, bad at the moment. That's going to be dynamite on the after-dinner speaking circuit in 10 years' time. Dynamite.
Yeah, but Nigel Ray's getting 30% of that.
the greatest trick the devil ever pulled.
I think we should leave it there.
Yes, agreed.
So I hope you have found that informative. I predict there'll be people thinking that elements have been soft on Saracens or whatever, but I actually think if you listen to what we've all three of us said in our own ways, we've all said it was stupid, naive at best, deceptive at worst.
Yeah.
We want to see why the recent decision has been made, and we agree with the report implemented as it was.
Yes.
And I actually think I'm quite proud of that hour that we've just done, because that is not disputing it. It's not disputing anything. It's agreeing with it, but I think it's doing it with the right level of analysis and nuance that has been lacking if you just delve into the Twitter cesspit.
Yeah. There have been some good threads on it.
I agree. But there have been the Nick West one that JB mentioned is one.
Yeah. And
Let's Gates of Higher.
Rugby in the Law is also always well considered and always very good. There have also been some interesting tweets.
Yeah.
Excellent. Right, let's go and talk about the Premiership.
Yes, right. We'll see you on the next one.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.